Welcome to Hey, Remember the 80s? I'm Carrie.
And I'm Joe.
Please remember, we're not professional podcasters or music critics. We're just where the eagles cry on a mountain high talking about 80s music. So give us a break.
I should have done that with you as a duet. Start over. Just kidding. Don't do
it. You always have big ideas for these intros, Joe. You gotta clue me in on them beforehand.
It's more fun this way.
Yeah, you're right.
Welcome, Carrie.
Welcome to you, Joe.
And welcome to any new listeners or loyal listeners. We found some in Atlanta, Georgia, Keeler, Wisconsin, and Shrewsbury, England. That's awesome.
I don't even know where Keeler, Wisconsin is.
Yeah, I would defer to you. You're the expert, yeah.
Oh, I'm looking it up right now. It's down by Iowa. Well, hello to those folks, and hello to everyone else. You can keep up with us on our Facebook at facebook.com/HRT80S and our Twitter at HRT80S. Twitter still exists.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yep, that is true. All right, Joe, we have a couple tidbits. Joe, so you are up first in tidbits because you have a big review to share with us.
Well, it's a mini review. I didn't take notes. So I saw Ricky Lee Jones last Saturday at the City Winery in St. Louis. Have you ever been to a City Winery?
I've never been to one. I'm familiar with their whole brand or whatever it is.
I think Ricky Lee is as well. Her first words when she got on stage were, the musicians here have a joke about City Winery. They say for musicians like us, this is the last place you go before you die.
Oh my God. Okay.
So tip your waiters, right? But then she said, we'll see if this is heaven or if it's hell.
That's funny. Were you like the youngest people in the audience?
I would think so. There were probably some people our age, but everyone there was there to have a good time. And it was a really, really great crowd. They were really responsive. And I met some really great people. You have to sit at a table. Carrie, you would hate this.
I know.
We were at like a four top and there were two people across from us. And then the table was connected on the left and right. So there were more people on all those sides. But I met some nice people, including a couple that's going to be at the Squeeze and Psychedelic Furs show that I'm going to be at later this year.
Well, there you go. I mean, you know, just making friends left and right, Joe.
And we got to talking about Charlie's 80s Attic, and he quizzed me. He said, I don't think you really play the deeper hits. Do you play Prefab Sprout? And I was like, yes. And he said, okay, do you play the English Beat? I'm like, oh, if we play Prefab Sprout, we're going to play the English Beat. Oh, but the show, Ricky Lee, she was great. Now, you would probably be upset. I feel like you are more familiar with the debut album and Pirates, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, she played nothing from Pirates, my favorite album.
Oh my gosh, that's shocking.
But there were four songs from the debut album, Easy Money, Last Chance Texaco. Oh, and the woman next to me, her favorite song was Danny's All-Star Joint, and she sang that one, and the woman was so excited. I loved it. It was the best.
That's awesome.
And we wore t-shirts that said Woody and Dutch after the song Woody and Dutch on the Slow Train to Peking. We tried to get her to see us at the merch booth, but she wasn't there, and the woman in charge was like, yeah, she ain't coming on here. She's had a rough day. And she said, but let me take your picture. I'd love to show her. And who knows if she really was like, all right, one, two, three, click. I totally pressed the button. But she did like my Instagram post with our picture in it and said, love it.
That's wonderful.
I knew it was a jazz quartet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had a feeling it was not going to be like a greatest hits tour. And I'm just happy to have seen her perform and sound as great as she did. And I was just enthralled the entire night.
Well, that's great. It sounds like you had a good time.
Yeah, she was great.
Well, we have another tidbit to cover, and we are recording this the day after Tina Turner passed away. And this one was rough. You were really broken up about it yesterday. I mean, I was too. I think everyone was. I was thinking to myself, it's so amazing when people of note pass away and you see the huge outpouring for them. And I just wish we could do that more in life. You know what I mean? There should have been every year a designated day that we all just posted pictures of Tina Turner or something, you know? when I was scrolling through Instagram yesterday, like almost everyone I followed was posting something about her. She was universally beloved and it was just amazing.
Yeah, I loved seeing the tributes from literally everyone and just the pictures I've never seen before and videos and interviews. Yeah. And I was saving photos left and right. Like, I've never seen this one. This one is so great. Thanks to everyone, too, that reached out. We had people message us about the news and sharing their, you know, thoughts about her and talking about what they love about her. And I had friends and family reach out. My mom sent me a text last night. She's like, I just wanted to let you know I heard. It's such a shame. I hope you're doing okay. You know, she was so great. I said, you must remember renting What's Love Got to Do with It for me 20 times when I was 13.
It's wonderful and lovely that you have such early memories of her. I came to her later in life, and so I don't have as strong a connection, but I definitely have grown to really love her in the past couple of years. And we talked about it when that documentary about her came out. Beyond being an amazing musical artist that just is still underrated. I mean, she's still underrated as a musical artist today. She doesn't get the appreciation she should for what she did in her career. But beyond that, you know, obviously just a wonderful woman and an amazing story and a survivor. And just, you know, if there's one person everyone can look up to, it's Tina Turner.
100%. Yeah.
So very sad to have lost her. But as we always say, when something like this happens, you know, the music will never die and we'll always have that. So anything else you want to cover in tidbits before we get into it?
No, we've got a big segment, so we might as well get started.
Yeah. This episode is dropping on May 30th. And so we are going to talk about the holiday that everyone loves to celebrate on May 30th. Offices are closed, businesses give their workers the day off, the streets are filled with revelers. It's National Jennifer Day.
Oh my God, that was a twist, girl. Are you O. Henry?
Well, of course, that means we are going to dedicate a whole episode to Jennifer Warnes. Well, just go with it, people, because I originally started writing this to talk about many more Jennifers, but Jennifer Warnes is going to take us down a rabbit hole.
Jennifer Warnes?
Yes.
The soundtrack lady?
Yes.
I mean, Jennifer Beals would have made more sense.
Well, just you wait and see.
All right, we'll see. Yeah. Carrie, remember we talked about Jennifer Warnes back in episode 64 in one of our first Just a Bit Outside segments. Can you believe we started that segment that early?
I really
150
can't.
Episodes ago.
I really cannot. Still
in the very beginning of, oh my God. I remember that segment. I know you think I don't remember what we talk about, but this one I do.
Okay.
Her deeper hit, Don't Make Me Over, made it to number 67 in early 1980. She wanted to be a singer from an early age and actually got offered a recording contract when she was just 7, but her father would not let her pursue singing at that time. After she graduated high school, she pursued musical theater, recorded an album, and was cast in the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. At this time, she was known simply as Jennifer. In 1968, she played the female lead in a Los Angeles production of Hair, and her recording of the song Easy to Be Hard from that show was her first charting single, but only made it to number 128. They went back that far? 128?
Yeah, I remember in the 60s, the Bubbling Under chart was like 30 spots.
Oh, crazy. Well, let's fast forward to 1982. After one big hit in 1977 and 6 minor hits, Warnes performed 2 consecutive soundtrack songs that were nominated for Oscars for Best Original Song. It Goes Like It Goes from Norma Rae won in 1979, and One More Hour from Ragtime was nominated in 1981. Here's a clip of One More Hour. It was written by Randy Newman for that Milos Forman movie about New York City in the early 1900s. One more sad song, play for me. One more sad. Play for me. One More Hour lost to Arthur's Theme by Christopher Cross, but Warns would be back in the Oscar race the next year.
Let's stop and talk about One More Hour for a moment.
One more moment? Yeah. One second.
I've heard of the movie Rank Time. I've never seen it.
Did you read the plot summary?
No, I did not. Did you? I love how you always read the plot summary.
I know. It helps the context sometimes.
Is it about mob stuff or something?
I just would rather you read it yourself.
All right. Okay. I will read it later. Now I'm excited. I mean, this sounds like a show tune.
100%. I mean, not a showstopper.
Yeah,
right?
No.
No one's dancing to this. I don't know. Is it like the 11 o'clock number in the show? Like it's the big emotional song probably?
I'm not sure, but it just was kind of one of those things where I was like, okay, fine.
It sets a mood.
Maybe it's one of those songs that you have to hear in the context of the movie for it to really be meaningful. But, you know, I would never in a million years listen to this on its own.
No, I liked that in the YouTube clip that you sent me. It just says Randy Newman, like you don't see her name anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a YouTube user named Scott Rhodes who says, why isn't Jennifer Warnes getting credited as the performer?
She's got her stands out there, I guess.
She does. And I just want to say I applaud that kind of stanistry. Is that a word?
It is now.
And I would like him to know, because we know he's listening, because this show has hashtag Jennifer Warnes on this episode. Sure, he has an alert. I applaud you, Scott Rhodes.
Scott Rhodes is to Jennifer Warnes as Joe Christopher is to Ricky Lee Jones. Are you doing that? You should start a trend where you go on YouTube and just make comments about Ricky Lee Jones on random stuff.
I might.
Why not? Back to that song that Jennifer took to the Oscar race the following year, the director of An Officer and a Gentleman, Taylor Hackford, asked his friend Gary George to recommend a singer for the song Up Where We Belong that had been written for the movie. While George had worked in publicity at a record company, but he had just gotten into music management and suggested Warnes, who was one of his new clients. Good for him. Hackford thought her past work was too sweet. Warnes had recently seen Joe Cocker perform on the Grammys, and she'd been a fan of his since her teens. So in order to rough up the track a bit, she suggested the song be turned into a duet between the two of them. Hackford was convinced by this, and he liked the parallel between the storyline of the movie, rough Richard Gere is softened by Deborah Winger, and this version of the song.
The lift is up where we belong, where the eagles cry.
But Hackford still had to fight to get it included in the movie. Studio execs thought that Cocker was a has-been and Warnes was a never-was, and they did not think the song could be a hit.
Ouch. Mm-hmm. That stings. Their words are yours.
That's theirs. Well, I mean, I summarized the feeling. Only after several other artists declined to write songs for the movie and time was running out did the execs relent and allow the song to be used. The movie was released on August 13th, 1982, and the song hit number one on the Hot 100 in November. It also won that Oscar for Best Song and a Grammy Award for Best Pop Performance by a Duo. Whew, Joe, mm-hmm. Up Where We Belong.
This is one of those songs where if you had asked me a month ago, I would have a totally different answer. I would say boring, never really cared for it. But you know what changed my mind, Carrie?
What's that?
Do you remember a Solid Gold 1982 countdown special that we watched?
Oh my gosh. I don't think I got to this part.
There were like 20 different performances in that show.
Yes.
And everybody lip synced. Their guitars weren't plugged in.
Yeah.
The live fade outs. It's insane, right?
Mm-hmm.
These two, I swear to you, really sang and sang well.
Oh my gosh, I have to watch.
You
the
really
end
need
of that.
To just
I
tell
do.
Me. You gotta agree with me at least that they're really live singing. And if you think they're not, don't tell me because it would break my heart. But they sounded so good. Marilyn McCoo was like, damn, I gotta sing up to this.
I was on the same page with you up until the point where you talked about Solid Gold, just because I haven't seen that. But this is a song I have always written off. It gets played way too much on like the regular 80s stations. You know, it's one of those big songs of the decade or whatever. And at a certain point, I just got sick of it, thought it was cheesy, blah, 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 blah. I think recently in the past couple months, I've heard it again a couple times and I've really enjoyed it.
What a journey for us.
I know. And then this week, I really was into it. You know, we're going to keep talking about Jennifer Warnes, but I think she has a great voice. Yeah. And I think that this song really is perfectly matched between them.
And that was her idea. Insane. I had no idea.
Yeah, I really think this song, I would have called it overrated, and now I'm just like, no, this perfectly gets rated. The love it needs, yeah.
But Carrie, this was not the end of Warren's work on soundtracks, or this segment would be over. The next year, she sang Nights Are Forever for Twilight Zone, the movie. The song appears very briefly playing on a jukebox in the segment directed by John Landis. It was released as a single and peaked at number 105 on the Bubbling Under chart in the summer of 83, but it did make it all the way to number 8 on the Adult Contemporary chart. Carrie, I loved this song.
Okay. I enjoyed it. I thought there were points where she got really shrill. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I genuinely just started looking into Jennifer Warnes. You know, I wrote, oh, this is interesting how she had a soundtrack song even before Up Where We Belong. Every new song that I discovered of hers, I was like, oh, here's another one. And they were all pretty good. We're going to get to one at the end. But yeah, I agree with you that like I was just ready to be like, oh, my God, Nights Are Forever from the Twilight Zone. What the hell is this? But it was it was good.
And you do all the clips and you do a great job. But I hope the clip we had was at least part of the verse, because I feel like that part is so much more unique and interesting than the chorus, which I still like. But it is a little more run-of-the-mill when you get to that part.
I honestly don't remember which part I clipped.
Trust me, if you're listening to this and you were on the fence about checking out this song, go do it, but it's only on YouTube. But Carrie, I found a copy of the cassette, the soundtrack, for $1.
Oh my God.
I have to have
it. And you ordered it?
Yes.
How much did you pay?
$1.
To get it shipped to you?
$5.
Oh my God, Joe, this is a problem.
It's so cute. Although it's the only song with vocals in it. Like it's
oh my God.
Six pieces from the score and her.
It's so bizarre. Why was this song written for this movie? Especially since it apparently doesn't even really factor in.
The comment I saw on YouTube, and I didn't take note of the user's name. Let's just say it was Scott Rhodes. He said, he said, I feel like the movie had a shadow over it after the tragedy that happened during filming, and the song kind of suffered from that. Now, I don't know that's necessarily true. Like, I don't think that's the reason the song didn't make it to the top 40, but that was such a sad story about the movie.
If you don't know anything about what happened during the filming of the Twilight Zone movie, like, we don't need to get into it. You can go read about that on YouTube, but it's just a bizarre song to have included. I mean, it's a bizarre for any song to be included in Twilight Zone, the movie. Like, it's just not necessary.
Did you watch that movie as a kid?
I don't think so.
Scared the hell out of me.
Actually, is there a redo of the segment where there's a gremlin on the plane or something?
With John Lithgow.
Okay. I definitely remember seeing that. I don't know if I saw the whole movie, but anyways. Ugh.
Well, singing backup on the song Nights Are Forever is Joseph Williams. He's the son of famous film composer John Williams, and he's done stints as the lead singer for Toto, including from 1986 to 1988. That's him singing lead vocals on Toto's final charting single, Pamela, which made it to number 22 in 1988. It was from Toto's seventh studio album called The Seventh One. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Lukather said that the members of the band were trying to one-up each other with the songs on this album. David Paich had written a song called Pamela, which was sort of a riff on Toto's big hit Rosanna. Williams also had a song called Pamela, written for a friend of his, so the two combined their songs. While the song was moving up the chart, the president of Toto's record label and one of their biggest champions left. Promotion for the single stalled out and no other singles charted. Williams was fired during the European tour because he was deep into drugs and unable to perform. But these days, he's back with Toto as part of the lineup that's currently touring.
Yeah, so when I saw this about him singing backup on Twilight Zone and then being the lead singer for Toto, I was like, oh, when was that? And then I looked it up and saw that he sang on Pamela. And I was like, okay, well, we got to talk about that song because I think it's my favorite Toto song.
Really? Wasn't it you that said once, you were like, Toto went real hard on the female name songs.
They really did. They had Pamela, they had Rosanna, they had Holy Anna.
Yeah, Holy Anna. That one was the biggest stretch, I think.
There's another one, too, that I'm forgetting. But anyways.
Sure there is.
I just really love it. I don't know what it is. I think he does a great job on it when he's like, Pamela, don't break this heart of mine. I just love it.
Yeah. Now that you tell me it's two songs put together, I can hear it. I do enjoy this song, too. My husband surprised me last weekend. He goes, hey, I just got back from that gas station and I know you hate it, but I went in and I heard Pamela by Toto. I love that he knew who it was and what it was, right?
He's getting sucked into the cult.
Pretty soon he's going to be like an up where we belong.
Yep. Well, let's get back to Jennifer Warnes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The same year that Nights Are Forever was used in Twilight Zone, she also sang another love duet for the soundtrack to All the Right Moves. This was Tom Cruise's follow-up to his breakout role in Risky Business and was about a high school football star. The song was also called All the Right Moves, and Jennifer sang it with Chris Thompson, who was a member of Manfred Mann's Earth Band. Reached number 85 on the Hot 100 and 19 on the Adult Contemporary chart. Joe, have you watched All the Right Moves?
I've never watched it, but guess what happened to me tonight?
Oh my gosh.
This is a tangent.
Okay.
As you may know, this is the biggest day because the Barbie trailer dropped. And then evening, the Dua Lipa song and video premiered.
Okay. I was not aware.
So I watched the Dua Lipa video twice. And after that, it auto-played the movie Vision Quest. Do you think that's odd?
Yeah, I do. I think it's odd that the movie Vision Quest is on YouTube.
Exactly. It wasn't like a bootleg copy. It was like, here's the movie, and just started playing. I watched the first 15 minutes. I think I'm going to finish it.
You've never seen Vision Quest?
No, we talked about this. Yeah.
Similar storyline, high school, whatever. I'm shocked that you haven't seen it, though, because, you know, you got so into Risky Business. I thought maybe you kept watching Tom Cruise's discography or filmography.
Don't worry. YouTube knows. So it's probably going to autoplay this one next. That's what I was getting at.
Okay. Got it. Well, this is another one that I really love.
You did? Oh,
yes.
Okay.
This is one we play on Charlie's, and have loved it ever since I heard it on Charlie's. I love her voice in this. I love when she's like, all the right moves. I'm really singing tonight.
The producer loved her voice, too. I love that the chorus, someone was like, let's turn her vocals up. and his the opposite of up.
True. She is very much the star song, of the song, and Chris Thompson is kind of along for the ride.
I don't know. For me, so far in the line that I heard and listened to all these songs by her, this one was, I was like, she's not selling it.
Interesting. Okay. We had very different reactions.
She's probably like, I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Okay. Well, maybe she wasn't feeling the whole storyline of All the Right Moves. The next year, Chris Thompson sang lead vocals on the Earth Band's last charting single, The Runner. This song was written and originally performed by Canadian Ian Thomas about a man named Terry Fox. Fox lost a leg to cancer, and to raise awareness and funding for research, he planned to run across Canada on his prosthetic leg. He unfortunately only made it halfway before having to stop for medical reasons. Manfred Mann's version was released just before the 1984 Olympics in LA, and the video featured shots of runners with the Olympic torch. The song made it to 22 on the Hot 100 and 3 on the rock chart. This is another song that has been on my 80s obscure playlist ever since I started making that, however many years ago it was that we started listening to countdowns and stuff. I really enjoy this one. You know what? It reminds me of Eye of the Tiger, kind of. It's like a motivational song, maybe, that you would put on like a, you know, running playlist or something like that.
Because it's called The Runner.
Well, that, but it also has got the same kind of
propulsive. Like,
you can do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Play this and then you're the best for the cool down.
Exactly.
This is one of my faves, too, and I definitely have a memory of, like you said, when we started listening to the countdowns, I heard this one, and I was like, oh my God, I haven't heard this song in 30 years, which I know I say a lot, but it's a great one. I love it.
It's got that really classic synth line that was kind of maybe even on its way out at that point. You know, it was like 1984 was just the end of the synth line, but this one has got a really good one.
Well, Carrie, it's back to Jennifer Warnes. Yes, there's still more Jennifer Warnes to talk about. We all know about her second number one soundtrack duet from 1987, I've Had the Time of My Life. But that same year, she was on yet another soundtrack duet. Jennifer, give it a break.
I mean, they really tried to make her happen over and over and over again.
You know what? She's at, what, about a 50% success rate?
I guess that's true.
And with the ones that hit, she's winning Oscars. She probably thinks the 80s were a giant win for her. I agree.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, this duet is from the movie Blind Date, and Carrie wrote here in the outline, insert Joe raving about Blind Date. You read my damn mind. I had the poster in my room. I loved this movie. The song was called Simply Meant to Be, and her duet partner was country singer Gary Morris. He recorded one of the earliest versions of The Wind Beneath My Wings, and he took it to number 4 on the country chart in 1983. It was one of 26 country hits that he placed on the charts, including 4 number ones. Simply Meant to Be was written by Henry Mancini, George Merrill, and Shannon Rubicam, who we know better as Boy Meets Girl. But I don't. It was released as a single, but it didn't chart. Maybe in the 60s, it would have been at like number 129 or something.
Yeah.
Time of My Life was Jennifer Warnes' last entry on the Hot 100, but she did place a couple more songs on the AC chart in the early 90s. And that is finally a wrap on Jennifer Warnes.
Yeah. Not before we talk quickly about Simply Meant to Be, which is the one that was a total dud for me.
I mean, I remember it from the movie.
When does it play in the movie?
No idea. It's been a little bit since I've seen it. I know I've heard it. And that had to be where I've heard it. You know what I mean? There's no other place I would have heard it. Except I have the soundtrack on cassette coming. I'm just kidding. I really don't.
And you know what's funny is I literally did see the Blind Date soundtrack at the record store like within the last year. Because I remember even talking to you about it because I do know you're a huge fan. There's nothing good on it. There's a bunch of songs by Billy Vera and the Beaters. Yeah. I didn't get it. Usually, you know, I'll buy any soundtrack. I think I told you I tried to watch Blind Date recently and I only made it 45 minutes in and then I had to stop. It was bad.
Yeah, that's pretty far too. I mean, there's a lot of setup.
Yeah. I remember seeing it when I was a kid and the big set piece of it, spoiler alert, is Kim Basinger. If she has like one sip of alcohol, she like completely loses her mind. The first 45 minutes, nothing is happening. But the only thing I remember from when I was a kid is her being a total lunatic. So I kept like being like, when did she turn into a lunatic? Wasn't fast enough for me.
I didn't realize until I watched the video you sent me, which was from the YouTube user Retrospective Soundtracks. I guess he takes movie clips and makes a video. Because that was not the real video for this song.
I get served those all the time on YouTube, don't you?
No.
I've seen those so many times, this Retrospective Soundtracks. That's a good YouTube channel. You can like watch that for like several hours if you want.
Well, the video for this one, though, it's like 45% kissing scenes between Bruce Willis and Kim Basinger. Which I guess the movie had a lot of it, but I do not remember that. But the video was making me uncomfortable.
All right. Good to know. Don't watch this one, folks, but go to that channel, I guess, and watch some other ones. Well, that is a wrap on Jennifer Warnes, but it's not a wrap on the episode. We cannot celebrate National Jennifer Day without talking about the most famous Jenny of the decade.
Your sister?
No, she's second. I'm talking about the song Jenny by Tommy Two Tone. What is the real story behind this song? It was written by Alex Call, not a member of the band, and Jim Keller, who was the guitarist for Tommy Two Tone. There are many different versions of where it came from. Lead singer Tommy Heath made up a story that it was about a Jenny that ran a recording studio. Another band member said it was about a girl he met in a nightclub. Keller told People back in 1982 that it was about a girl he knew whose number was actually written on a bathroom wall. He said he called the number on a dare and actually dated that girl for a while, but he said he hadn't talked to her since the song became a hit because she thought he was a real jerk. I know you think I'm like the other people. But Alex Call says none of those stories are true. He just came up with it sitting in his backyard, and there was no actual woman he was thinking of named Jenny. He came up with the phone number and the name, but not the context. It was when his buddy Jim Keller showed up that afternoon and Call played him the song. Keller said it was obvious the number should be written on a bathroom wall. The song reached number 4 on the Hot 100 and topped the rock chart. It was Tommy Two Tone's biggest hit, but they did not reach the chart again and broke up in 1983. But now they're back out there on tour. They're going to play Jenny about 5 times in a row.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to see them.
I'm sure it'll be fun. I'm really interested to see what they will play.
Yeah.
Besides Jenny and Angels Say No.
Angels Say No. Yeah.
Jenny is another one, like, it's kind of the same vibe as Up Where We Belong, where, like, I really hated it for a long time. I don't say I would like it now, but I also do not hate it anymore. I think I'm just kind of wildly indifferent to it.
I think I might have been indifferent to it before, but now I just change it. When it comes on, I just can't.
Yeah, it is one of those songs that just gets so overplayed. It's such a shame. It's such a shame because, I mean, it's not a bad song. It's not actively horrible, but it is just too much when you hear it this much.
It's probably all those memes I see, too, from those 80s groups that I follow. Every day there's someone making a joke about it. And I'm like, you guys have run the well so dry, bone dry.
I'm curious, too, why this song is one that has, you know,
persevered.
I think it's just literally because it's catchy, you know, 8675309.
It is.
Rolls off the tongue.
Catchiness department, yes, 10 out of 10. I can't deny that.
That is National Jennifer Day. That was fun. Shout out to my sister, Jennifer, if she's still listening. She hasn't talked to me about the podcast in quite some time.
Let's badmouth her. Yeah. Finally, we're free of the shackles. We can say what we want. Just kidding. But now that we are celebrating National Jennifer Day, now it feels like it's finally going to be summer. I'm always waiting for that day.
You know, when National Jennifer Day is over, it's just blue skies ahead.
I'm and trying to do a segue. Of,
I know. Speaking of, next week on the podcast, we are going to cover summer songs. We did a big series way back when, well, over two summers.
Oh, yeah. Songs of the Summer.
Songs of the Summer, yeah. And then Songs of the Summer R&B. This is not the same thing. This is literally songs that have summer in them.
Yeah. Dino, so Summer Girls.
I did not include that. You can write that one up if you want.
I just did. I'm good. Okay. You don't have to talk about it.
Anything else this week, Joe?
I love summer.
Yeah, I love summer too. I'm real ready for summer to be here, folks. I'm real ready for it. I will lead us out then, and I will just say, like, hey, let's make this summer the summer of kindness. Kindness to other people, kindness to the world, kindness to plants, kindness to animals. Most importantly, kindness to yourself. And enjoy every sandwich.
Yes, please. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.
When you were a young boy, did you have a puppy?